6 years ago. So the question I want to make some remarks on is this issue that you can see the structural plateau in ADS, and then according to ADS-FT, this should be described by certain super young Mill theory that finite temperatures are agreed to with for ADS-5. So that should be equivalent to certain super young Mill theory at finite temperature that if you do an eternal black hole, say for example, and then would be a super young Mill theory at finite temperature on the say on a three dimensional sphere. So example would be an equal super young Mill theory with a gauge group based UM. So as we know that the black hole has a horizon and has a singularity. So the theoretical challenge is that the ADS-FT should tell us what happens to the horizon and the singularity and also the region beyond the horizon, say in the quantum gravity. So to answer this question, so we first need to understand how we can actually describe the region inside the horizon using ADS-FT. In particular, the region inside the horizon is actually like a cosmology because of the time. Now it becomes time dependent, and so this is like some kind of baby model for cosmology. So the plan of my talk is that first I will talk about some more recent discussion regarding the formulation of the RG, the holographic RG using the Wilsonian perspective, which is based on these two papers. And then I will, in the light of this more recent development, try to talk about some speculations on how to describe the physics beyond the horizon, which mostly based on the papers which are somewhat 5-6 years ago. So the first is one of the central organizing principle to understand the boundary and the bulk physics in ADS-FT is the so-called LUV connection, which has been which was realized very early on for the discovery of the ADS-FT, is that this radial direction in the ADS actually should be properly thought as some kind of energy scale or the length scale, which that the bulk, the radial direction simply can be considered as a geometrization. So the normalization group flow of the boundary system, and with the region near the boundary corresponding to the UV, and the region very in the interior corresponding to the IR. So from the field theory perspective, one of the best, really the best way we know how to organize the field theory or many body system is the Wilsonian RG, which tells us that we should organize the system by energy scales, and also tells us if we are interested in some kind of low energy physics, then we should integrate out the high energy degree freedom, and then the effect is encoded in some kind of low energy effective action. So if you start just to set up the location, so if you start with some kind of bare action with a UV cutoff lambda zero, and you can choose to integrate out degree freedom between lambda zero and some low energy scale that you are interested in, and then the effect of integrating out those degree freedom will generate an effective action which I call IUV, which is the so-called Wilsonian effective action. And as you change the scale lambda, this IUV essentially parameterizes the trajectory in your theory space, and all the points on the theory, on this trajectory give you equivalent low energy physics. And in principle, if you can keep this integration procedure precise, say if you keep really the exact IUV, actually this procedure is actually reversible. So actually we can recover the UV degree freedom. UV theory actually starting from an IR theory, as far as you keep the full effective action. Okay, so now the question is that how we do this. What is the counterpart of this Wilsonian effective action in the dual gravity description? So even though there have been much work on the holographic RG, say very much since the first day of ADS-FT, but I think this Wilsonian point of view has not really been properly developed. So I will talk about some small steps in this direction, and also I will comment on some relations. Yeah, so we work strictly in the Lagrangian limits, so that essentially we work with the classical gravity region or the semi-classical gravity region. So first, let me just tell you my gravity setup. So I will consider some kind of general metric like this. Say they don't with the translation symmetry in the time and the in the boundary time and the boundary spatial direction. And the radial coordinate is z, and so we are also for simplicity assuming the symmetrical ADS, which is not but should not be essential. So that I will assume the translation symmetry, so the metric will only depend on z, and also rotational symmetry, so there's no cross term. And so one of the interesting thing happening in the ADS-FT is that for the generic such kind of metric, for all the examples we know. Say if the z is really say some kind of you can choose z arbitrarily, but if z is say some kind of a monotonic function say of your proper distance in the Bach direction, then we found that the GTT, this coefficient before the time direction, it's actually always a monotonic decreasing function with z when you go to the Bach. Yes.
Interrupting already at this point, again, what did you say about the asymptotic ADS assumption? Because assuming asymptotic ADS would be like saying, from the RG point of view, would be like saying, I'm going to do Wilsonian quantum field theory,
yeah.
But I assume my theory is UV conformal invariant.
Yeah, you start with a UV
conformal. So Wilson is not going to do that.
You can. You can start with some UV fixed point, then you turn on some relevant operator.
It's not a Wilsonian framework. It's not a Wilsonian framework.
Why not?
You don't assume anything about the real deep UV.
When I say UV, I just put some cutoff. I always imagine some cutoff.
Why then do you insist on asymptotic ideas?
It's just for convenience. I would say it's not essential, just for convenience. Yeah, of course, we always put some cutoff, but Okay, so the consequence of this GTT, which being a monotonic decreasing function with z, is that the if you do a simple, say, this kind of redshift argument, is that then the boundary energy scale is related to the local proper Bach energy scale by this redshift factor. And if you consider the general, say, generic energy scale of the Bach energy scale, say, the local proper energy scale is 1 over r, the curvature radius of ADS, then for typical process at some radial distance, then you find the energy scale associated in the boundary is given by that form. And since the GTT is a monotonic decreasing function with z, so that means that when you go to more interior in the Bach, you go to lower energies from the boundary. So this is the IRUV connection.
And do you care, for example, how fast GTT depends on z, varies with z in general?
Not so much. I think as far as the monotonic decreasing would be fine. So for example, in the pure ADS, then GTT would be just r over z squared,
right.
And then the e just related to 1 over z.
Sometimes it's log of that.
Yeah, but in general, it will be a difference. Yeah. Okay, so this is just so now the basic idea. So this just suggests a basic idea how to do the Wilsonian RG in the Bach. Is that in the boundary theory, what we do for the Wilsonian RG is that we start with some kind of UV cutoff, and then we integrate out in this freedom between say lambda and lambda zero. So we can just do this in the Bach, because now we have a relation between the radial location in the Bach and the boundary energy scale. So we can try to integrate out the so simple proposal is just to integrate out the Bach degree of freedom in the region between this epsilon zero and epsilon, and so the result of that. So if you start with the path integral in the Bach. So you should understand this hot integral in the semi-classical language, say which phi is say include all the fields in the box. And now if you integrate out this region, and then what you happen is you induce a boundary effective action on this cutoff surface. So you just induce some kind of effective action on this cutoff surface. And essentially, your space time is just the region greater than epsilon, but with some kind of effective action living on the boundary. Yeah. Okay.
So different excitations in ADS have different energy at a given place in Z.
Yeah.
So this cutoff is in Z, but not really in energy.
So I'm going to mention that point later. This just means that this is not a sharp energy cutoff in the field theory point of view, some kind of soft cutoff.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to mention this point. Yeah, I'm going to mention that later. So now, then actually, just from the simple, I will not go into detail here, just from the normal ADS safety procedure, you can argue, at least in the Lagrangian image, this IUV, the Wilsonian effective action, is actually related to this SP in the bulk by some by Legendre transform. And in particular, if we can, in the bulk, we can try to expand this SP in terms of the complete set of the local operator in the bulk. Yeah, a complete set of the field in the bulk, and then that translates into some boundary effective action. For example, say phi is mapped to some operator O, and then the phi square is mapped to say some O n, etc. And so generically, you will have multiple trace operator will be induced along the flow. And this is consistent from the field theory expectation. So if you have a large n. A matrix field theory, and typically multiple traits will be generated. So now let me just mention a little bit just in perspective. So the physics should really not depend on where we choose this cutoff surface. For example, so just as the standard Wilsonian picture, so that should lead to some kind of flow equation for this HP. And the equation is very simple, just the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And with this Hamiltonian given by the Hamiltonian corresponding to the Z foliation in the bulk. So you can essentially just treat this function, this equation as some kind of functional equation, and then by equate on both sides, say functionally, and then you can derive the beta function. Yeah, essentially the coefficient of this SP when you expand in terms of complete set of the fields, and there will be your coupling constants, and then this equation will just give you the beta function.
All operators including multiple trace, or just only?
Everything.
But doesn't that exceed the number of the fields in ADS on the other side?
No.
But the single trace operator corresponds to single particle. State
right.
In ADS.
Yeah, that's
multiple
right.
Trace operator should correspond to multiple state.
Yeah.
But
right.
for the same particle.
Yeah, that's right.
So shouldn't we add sources only for single trace operators?
No, it's from the Bach point of view, this is the equation. So generically, if you expand some kind of Bach effective action, so that would be some power of phi, and the linear term in phi would correspond to the source for the single trace operator.
You see,
phi square would be corresponding to double trace.
You see, what you get as a result
is
the first order differential equation with respect to epsilon.
Yeah.
But you should get second order differential equation with respect to epsilon. Doesn't that bother you?
No.
Because the gravity in ADS is a second order differential equation. Classical equations of motion in the gravity are second order differential equations. Well, what you get is a first order differential.
Yeah, but this well-known equivalence between the second order differential equation to the first order differential equation in the
but how do you get from this first order differential equation second order differential?
Oh yeah, this is just followed from Donald Lipschitz volume 1 mechanics. Yeah.
That's fortunately occasionally I know, but but that doesn't explain how you get from this first order differential equation Cauchy problem, second order Hamiltonian equations.
I think we can talk about that more specifically. I think maybe you are asking something which maybe I haven't appreciated. We can talk about it. Okay, so this equation essentially gives you the beta function, and it tells you how this theory flow, and the unit is the Gentler transform. You can translate into the boundary theory language. So let me just comment a little bit on the role of this boundary effective action from the Bach perspective. So in the standard ABCFT procedure, we solve some classical equations. At least in the Lagrangian limit, and with the boundary conditions, say, at this cutoff surface, and then the regularity conditions in the interior. So what we are doing is that now we are moving this cutoff surface, now we are moving the surface we put the boundary condition to some interior surface. And essentially we just shift the boundary condition to some to another surface at z equal to epsilon. So of course, what we want is that when we shift this boundary condition, when we shift the surface, we don't want to change the physics, and keep the same classical equation. So that means that we should require the different boundary condition at this epsilon from epsilon zero, and so that just gives you a change. So the shift of the cutoff surface, you just correspond to a flow of boundary condition, so that corresponds to the flow of HB. So in some sense, from the Bach point of view, everything just can be formulated in terms of rewriting your equation of motion. Yes?
Because the form of the equation you wrote down just had scalar fields and nothing.
You can do gravity. You can do gravity and just. It's fine just for include everything. Yeah, including gravity.
But even the form of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation depends on. On whether you include gravity.
Yeah, in general it will. Yeah. So I'm writing at least in the semi-classical language, if you in the point of the saddle point of fluctuation for the path integral, and then I think there's no ambiguity. You can do that. Just the equation is more complicated. But you are asking a more generally in quantum gravity formulation that I don't know how to do it.
Okay.
Even
classical gravity, I'm talking.
Classical gravity, you can do it.
But the equation would look differently.
Yeah, equation will look differently. In particular, when you include the graphs, there will be some additional subtleties related to the usual subtleties of the diffeomorphism, etc. Yes, did you?
Yeah, I'm sort of asking the same question somebody else asked, but I'm a little bit confused. I mean, going from second order to first order in ADS-CFT is a little bit, I mean, it's not just going from like Lagrangian to Hamiltonian. It involves fixing the normalizable in terms of the non-normalizable modes, which is only fixed by imposing regularity in the interior. It's not a local rewriting of the equations near the boundary.
Here, I'm not talking about any specific solution yet. Here we are just talking about here at this level is really just a rewriting of the equation of motion. It's just a rewriting of the equation of motion. We are not talking about solving the equation of motion yet. And then that requires, imposing boundary condition, etc.
It's in fact related to my question, because that first order differential equation you will solve by fixing only initial conditions for all this G.
Right.
But for the second order you have to fix G and conjugate momentum.
Yeah, what I'm saying, at this moment, we are just rewriting the equation of motion. We are not talking about specific solutions.
But you're fixing both the normalizable and non-normalizable modes as your boundary conditions?
Not necessarily. What I fix my boundary condition is that I fix the coefficients of this at some cutoff surface, and then I solve this first equation. And when you do that, it's equivalent. And when you try to rewrite that in terms of second order language, indeed, corresponding to fix both normalizable and non-normalizable equation, but that is not solving the general solution. That procedure is just to rewrite your equation.
Sorry, you're fixing the coefficients of operators in the action.
No, I think we have to distinguish between to solve explicitly physical solution and to rewrite your equation of motion.
Right.
Here, we're not talking about any specific solutions.
Right.
We're just talking about rewriting the equations.
That's fine. But you're fixing the coefficients of couplings in the action. I mean, that's how you say you're fixing your gravity.
Yeah.
But that doesn't fix the normalizable modes.
No, that's fixed both normalizable and non-normalizable modes at infinity. When I try to relate that, when I try to rewrite this equation, so I find this coefficient by solving some this first order differential equation. But if you can reformulate solving this first order differential equation to some second order differential equation, and that involves fixing both normalizable and non-normalizable modes. That's fine. But we are not solving the general physical solutions at this moment. We are just trying to rewrite the equation. It's a, yeah. Okay, so, again, this is consistent with what we understand of the role of the multiple choice operators. Essentially, they impose some more general boundary conditions from the ADS point of view. So here is a very simple scalar example. So if you can see a scalar field, you can just try to perform some kind of derivative expansion in the bath. So this would be your source term, and then this term will correspond to a double trace deformation from the field theory point of view. And then you can just using that equation to write down the vector to write down the flow equation for this double trace coupling. So if you do it for pure ADS, then you get a very simple equation. And this delta is the dimension of the operator. So this actually agrees exactly with the field theory results. Just in the double trace sector, there's some kind of universality independent of the details of the system. So at least this equation, this kind of bulk equation does capture it. So this is a support, can be considered as a support of this proposal. And so for the pure ADS case, if you have a CFT, and say if you don't put the double trace coupling at infinity, say at your cutoff, UV cutoff, and then this double trace will not be generated. But for more general geometries, say if you consider finite temperature or finite density or some non-conformal theory, and then the double trace term and multiple trace term actually they're typically generated, even if it's not in your bag. Okay, so now let me mention some caveats. So this identification of the boundary energy scale with the bulk radial coordinate is still only heuristic based on some kind of very rough redshift arguments. And also, I think it's a really understanding question is that what is the precise realization scheme in the boundary theory which corresponding to this bulk radial direction cutoff? And in particular, this radial direction cutoff clearly is not, say, sharp momentum or energy cutoff, because in the remaining region, you still have some high energy modes. And so that cannot be so it's more like a soft cutoff. And actually, another interesting subtlety is that actually in the integrated out region, you don't guarantee, when you integrate out this part of the region in the bulk, actually you don't guarantee you will always get a local effective action. Actually, in the integrated out region, there actually could be some capitalist modes of the boundary theory, which resides in part of the geometry. And that actually will result in a non-local SP. So in that case, you actually need to put those modes back by hand in the low energy theories. Actually, it turns out what this happens is it's a kind of situation which you really have some interesting phenomena from the point of view, say, of the many body dynamics. So you have some kind of holographic forming surface or closed field quantum phase transitions, or you have some conservation laws. Often in this integrated other region, actually there could be some kind of gapless modes.
Yeah, so for example, just the one branch.
That's right, yeah. So you have to be careful about that, yeah. Yeah. There are other examples which I think, yeah. Anyway, so Yeah, so let me just very quickly mention one possible application is that this procedure can help you extract learned behavior a little bit quicker and more transparently. And you can, if you're only interested, say, in the learned behavior of the boundary theory, you can push the equal to epsilon circuit all the way to the most important IR region, so you don't need to worry about that region of the bound space time. So that can simplify your calculation and organize your physics better, etc. For example, if you do the finite temperature, then you can just put your cutoff circuit very close to the horizon and only worry about this region in the, near the horizon region. And yeah, for example, if you want to extract hydrodynamics, and then it's enough to solve the equations in the near horizon region. Right. So now, yeah, now let me mention a relation with the earlier work. So in the bulk, so this is your full partition function, and say you have some cutoff in the UV, etc. And our procedure is to integrate out this part, and then the SB is the quantity we look at. And so there was an earlier formulation, for example, by Debord, Valinda, and Valide, which they essentially consider the flow of this full bulk partition function, say when you change this UV cutoff. Yeah, certainly this also gives you RG equation, but it's not your solution because that the this full bulk partition function involving the IR information, so it depends on IR data. So both this full partition function and this SB they satisfy the Hamilton Jacobi equation, but they contain the different physics. Okay, so now let's go to the ADS, the black hole. So this is the metric, and so I can see the ADS 5 black hole. So this is a typical metric factor. And so there are three places in this metric which are very special. So first is the boundary, which sits at I equals infinity, which this F factor goes to infinity. And then there's another special place is the horizon, which this factor goes to zero. And then the third place, which is very special, is that you go to the singularity. And at the singularity, when r goes to zero, and then this factor goes to minus infinity. And so outside the horizon, r is a spatial coordinate. So if you decrease r, it goes in this direction. But when you go inside the horizon, and r becomes the time coordinate because of this f change sign, and r becomes time coordinate, and essentially you have a cosmology, and also the time in this region is actually dynamically generated because there's no boundary coordinate corresponding to this time, so understanding this region inside the horizon. It's like, in some sense, try to use ADS-F2 to describe some kind of a cosmology in which the time is dynamically generated. So now we'll try to make some remarks like how we describe this region inside the horizon. So just follow upon this kind of redshift analysis we discussed earlier for the IRUV connection. So let's consider the region outside the horizon, just repeat what I said earlier to this more specific case of the black hole geometry, is that so outside the horizon, F is greater than zero, and then the boundary energy scale related to the bulk probe energy scale by this F factor. And when you go to the, so the standard story is that F goes to infinity as you approach the boundary, so that relates the boundary to the UV of the field theory and the horizon to the IR of the field theory. And then this is the story I mentioned earlier, that the bulk evolution in R is related to the flow in the energy scale. So now let's consider, just try to naively apply this analysis to the region inside the horizon. And now what's interesting is that this F becomes smaller than zero. So let's just try to do it naively nevertheless.
Zero, as your quotient F goes to zero,
yes.
That's like the infrared.
Yes.
But is there... Is the horizon really massless? We have a temperature here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so should we think about the horizon as being somehow the very, very low energy physics even below the scale of the temperature?
Yeah. It's essentially some kind of hydrodynamics. Hydrodynamics.
So there is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I'm really working in the large N limit. So this is a particular slicing of a space which is most symmetric. So in some sense, in the classical level, it's preferred.
We can talk more about that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So now let's try to apply this analysis naively to inside the horizon, which this f becomes smaller than zero. So let's say, nevertheless, let's do it. And then now there's an important I, because f becomes smaller than zero. Now you want to relate this scale, this thing, to the boundary time, and then now you have an I. So now it seems like now this becomes a spatial coordinate, and this improper is actually now can be considered some kind of spatial momentum. But you still have isometry in this direction. And so the local momentum, real momentum, now is mapped to an imaginary energy in the field system. And in particular, the singularity which f this factor goes to infinity, which this f goes to infinity, then corresponding to the boundary energy scale goes to plus minus I infinity. And the horizon, and then corresponding to, still corresponding to the, if you approach the horizon from inside the horizon, and again, this corresponding boundary energy scale is imaginary, but approach to zero. So now, from this naive picture, it seems like the bulk evolution in R, which is now is a time evolution in the inside the horizon, actually seems to correspond to a flow in the imaginary energy. Okay. So does this make any sense? Does this analysis actually too naive? Actually, so to answer that, we can try to look at some correlation functions to see whether this kind of physics, say, is reflected, say, in some physical observables. So that's the thing which Guido Fatsucha and I looked at it a few years ago. So essentially, let's consider some generic operator, and then consider, for example, consider some two-point functions at finite temperature. So the simplest one you can consider is so-called Weismann function. And you can also consider others like retarded or Feynman-Green function, etc. And then the black hole, and it's actually more convenient to consider the in momentum space because the translation symmetry in those directions. And then from the black hole geometry, we can compute this quantity G plus. Another question is whether how can we read about the black hole geometry from this behavior of the G plus? And so that's the question. And so here is the result, which let me just summarize to you. First is that this G plus actually, this Weismann function actually have a continuous spectrum, which goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. So it's supported all the way on the real frequency axis. And this feature from the back point of view comes from the presence of the horizon.
Just because of the finite, then?
That would be the key. But this is a Nagy limit. This would be the key.
Okay.
So another feature is that there's a simple pulse in the complex frequency plane of this quantity, of this G plus. And then also you can, in order to make this connection to the Bach geometry, you can actually consider a regime which this dimension of this operator is not. And then one can make a precise connection between this G plus and some kind of Bach geodesics. So say, for example, for some given frequency and the momentum, and then actually this G plus can be uniquely associated with some complex geodesics in the Bach. And so in particular, each geodesics is characterized by a turning point. It's characterized by a turning point, and the behavior of this quantity is actually most sensitive to the Bach geometry near the turning point. It's a And so this way you establish a relation between this momentum space. So now, so for each momentum, say choice of omega and k, you associate with the geodesics, and each geodesic has a turning point in the bulk, according to some radial direction, radial location. So this establishes a map between the momentum space and the radial location, and the bulk geometry. And this map is as follows. So this is the diagram which summarizes the result. So first, this is the complex frequency plane, and for generic momentum. So first, you find that this G plus have poles on this diagonal direction, say a line of infinite number of poles extend all the way to infinity, but there's a gap in the small omega region. There's a gap in the small omega region, and then what you find that the mapping of this turning frequency to the turning point is precisely that the if you can see the real frequency, and then that's mapped to the radial position outside the horizon, precisely as what's happening in the LRUV, is that the if you have large frequencies, then mapped to the boundary, and the lower frequencies, then the turning point will approach to the horizon. But since the green function is defined for the full frequency, for the full real axis, you can actually analytically continue to the complex plane. And then what you find is that for the imaginary frequency, say if your green function, if G plus evaluated as the imaginary frequency, and the turning point is mapped to some radial location in the inside the horizon, in particular, when you take the I, imagine omega to infinity, you approach the singularity. So this is precisely consistent with the naive picture we obtained with the heuristic redshift analysis. So that tells you that this naive redshift analysis likely really captures some general physics. That the it's likely this kind of imaginary frequency can be used as a probe of the physics inside the horizon. So the pitch, yeah.
Geodesics, you said they were complex, but these are just ordinary space-like geodesics in the bulk?
Yeah, they're generically complex. They're generically complex geodesics, but for the omega become real and omega become pure imaginary, they're actually real geodesics. Yeah, but for generic omega, complex omega, then they will be complex. Okay, so now this raises the following picture. Now we can ask the following question. So even for Itsuwa-Yamil's series defined for the real frequency, and now we find that if you've got imaginary frequency, actually that seems to describe the physics inside the horizon. And so now can we imagine doing some analytic continuation? Take your input for Itsuwa-Yamil series. And take omega go to, say, some kind of imaginary omega. And then that may, say, give you something which I call, say, n equal to 4 hat. And then this a equal to 4 Itsuwa-Yamil series will be described by the physics on the real axis, and which is outside the horizon. And then this n equal to 4 hat, which describes the, which corresponding to the imaginary frequency, then describe physics inside the horizon. And also I should emphasize that this analytic continuation is different from the standard Euclidean one. So let me try to explain the difference. So let me do the complex frequency plane. So let me first consider the retarded Green function, and then I talk about G plus. For the retarded Green function, it's analytic in the upper half plane. But in the lower half plane, you can have poles. So this, say, for example, you have this infinite line of poles, line of infinite number of poles. And the standard analytic continuation to the Euclidean signature corresponding to you analytic continue the imaginary frequency on the upper half plane. Okay, yeah, maybe I should use a different notation. So this gives you analytic continuation to Euclidean omega e. And so this gives you the Euclidean omega e for the half of the frequency, And the other half is supplied by the advanced Green function. So the advanced Green function is opposite. You have pole in the upper half plane. And then it's analytic in the lower half plane. And then the location of the imaginary quantized frequency along the imaginary axis of GA, then this gives you GE. It gives you a Euclidean correlation function. Okay. So what, and the G plus essentially corresponding to G plus is essentially GR minus GA. It's a combination of these both. So the analytic condition we are talking about, if you phrase it into the language of the retarded Green function, it's corresponding to analytic condition, not to the lower, to the opposite of the standard Euclidean analytic condition. So the standard Euclidean analytic condition is you analytic condition into this analytic part of the upper half plane. But here the analytic condition is to the lower part, which you have a non-trivial singularity. Anyway, yeah. So this is so this is the distinction from the standard analytic configuration. So the standard analytic configuration, because the upper half plane is analytic, you can do it at any frequency. But here, because of the pole, you can only do it. So you have to do it around the small omega, and then continue along this axis. If you go this way, and then you encounter this pose, then become very subtle. So there's no simple analytic continuation from the, say, large omega there to the large omega here. So if you want to analytic continue the behavior from here to here, you have to go through omega equal to 0. I think likely this Euclidean theory only depends on time, because the spatial section shrink near the singularity. And I don't know. This is a very good question, which I don't know the answer. Yes. I think somehow it's related to how you put in this I. That's right. Yeah. That I don't know. It's true. That I don't know. Yeah, that I don't know. It's somehow it's a feature of this behavior. Anyway, so now we can put all this in the framework of this Wilsonian RG, which I talked about earlier. So we can put this in the framework of the Wilsonian RG, which I talked about earlier. Is that now if you think about the black hole geometry, so let's do different R slice. So this is R in the this is R. So what we can do is that we can say start from the field theory point of view, we can try to get the theory inside the horizon by this way. We can start the inquiry for Sobeyamir theory, say at finite temperature at some UV cutoff scale, and then we integrate out degrees of freedom to go to some low energy effective action, and then that's the way of making analytic integration to this inquiry for hats. Okay. And then now you have to integrate in degree of freedom to go to this to go to UV of the incompatible Sobeyamir theory in order to get the singularity. So from the Bach point of view, it's that you start from the boundary of ADS. So you integrate in, so you integrate all degree of freedom all the way to the horizon, and now you do an analytic integration, become a surface like this. And now you can push this thing into the single. So the singularity is like some kind of some UV fixed point of this hat system. Actually, even though I call this inquiry for hats, I think likely this theory actually does not depend on details. So this theory you start with, and actually because when you go through this low energy process. I would imagine that all the details of the macroscopics of this theory should not be important. Somehow I would expect this incredible hat should be something universal.
Why would you expect that? I mean, usually analytic continuation doesn't commute with approximation. So just because it seems like things that are outside of the UV of this diagram
yes.
can affect what's going on.
You mean You mean what's happening here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the strictly speaking, what you can do is just you can just keep your exact effective x. Then when you do this procedure, keep your exact effective action, and then will include all the information, whatever, here.
Right.
And then at here, then you do an if cancellation to inside the horizon, then you push into that direction.
But that'll probably depend on the details of that exact action. You can't fiddle around with it.
Yeah, I think this is a question I cannot answer you for sure, but my own guess is that somehow by doing an identification here, you may actually may not depend on the details there, but I cannot answer that for sure.
I have confusion about
that.
You really mean the providers of the four superior males?
Mm?
You mean the provider behavior?
Yeah, it's...
What is the temperature? Should the temperature be speedable from that problem?
Yeah, yes, here it should not be important. So here you just essentially you start with the
temperature
or find the same thing? You won't find the same thing. The temperature.
Yeah, so what does that mean?
You mean you at some energy scale much higher than temperature?
Much bigger than T.
Yeah.
What does T mean matter?
Hmm?
Why does T matter?
For your starting point, the T does not matter, but at this state T becomes important. Yeah.
But I think the question is the UV of the half theory has to also still depend on the temperature.
That may depend on temperature, may not depend on temperature, I don't know.
Well,
that may depend on the temperature. I think it likely depends on temperature, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the presence of the singularity is related to there being a black hole, related to there being a temperature.
Yeah, somehow the black hole plays a very important role at this stage, because in order to have to do this analytic calculation, you need this horizon, you need this knowledge. In order to do this analytic calculation, you need to go to energy much smaller than the temperature. And then you do an incantation, and then somehow you can push to the UV. I don't know. This is the calculation which I propose that we'll do, but I haven't done.
So the RG is taking you to low energies?
Yes.
And it has to learn about temperature on the way.
That's right. Yeah. So you have to push at the energy scale much lower than the temperature. And at that scale, you can do an incantation. And then push back to the UV again in this new theory.
So that you do by integrating n degrees of freedom.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but as I mentioned, that if you keep your exact effective action in the sense the RG flow is reversible. Yes.
Is there a little tool that you could use as you go to a low energy? That means you'll be pretty much doing something at high temperature. I think of low energy proof. But isn't that classical?
Yeah, so very much at this scale is controlled by the hydrodynamics, but maybe there's still some subtle things. It's very much the macroscopic physics at this scale would be just hydrodynamics. But then there might be still, I don't know, there might be still some other subtle things. Yeah. Yes?
Just a quick comment. I mean, this is very much an assumption that you make the interior Euclidean in this way, because, for example, there are very simple black holes where the interior of the black hole is covered by the Poincaré patch of ADS, and time and space are standard inside RG flow is the usual thing. And so I don't think it has to be made this difficult.
I don't know how universal this picture is. I think this picture is more very much tuned to the internal black hole. Do you have a perfect thermal state? In some sense, do you have a perfect thermal state, and then you have all this analytic control? But I don't know how general of these to other similarities. But I found it attractive somehow, to thinking somehow the physics inside the horizon maybe can be obtained by some theory which you can obtain by analytic calculation. Yeah, so let me just continue a little bit. So the story we just described is really in the large n limits. So the question, what's happening in the large n at finite n? So first let me just mention some obvious thing. Say if you have input for super young Bill theory on S3 at finite n, then you have a discrete energy spectrum. As a result, so whatever correlation, if you look at the Weismann function, then that only depends on, well, that will only be supported on the difference among the among your energy spectrum. Only supported on the energy differences. So if you have a discrete spectrum, and then your Weismann function will actually only be supported on the discrete set of points on the real axis would be just a sum of a discrete data functions. But in the gravity, we do see that you have a continuous spectrum that is the present of horizon. But this is a very simple way to understand it. Is that if you consider, say, the energy spectrum of a super young Hamiltonian on the compact space, it roughly goes like this. So at some near the vacuum, the energy is of order 1. By order 1, I mean it's independent. And then the level spacing is also of order 1. But when you go to some very high energy scale, say, of order energy n square, which is corresponding to, which is the energy scale corresponding to dominant energy scale, say, for the thermal ensemble, when your temperature is sufficiently high, and then the level spacing becomes very small, say, becoming faint of medicine scale. And so the difference of this spacing will give you a continuous spectrum in the margin. And so the picture now we found is the following. So at the finite end, you have a very boring analytic structure. Essentially, your correlation function is just supported on the data functions. But when you go to infinite n, and then now you have a continuous spectrum, and now you can do analytic continuation. In particular, you can analytic continue to the imaginary axis. And now it seems like that kind of analytic continuation gives you the region inside the horizon. So it seems like this encode for hats or the space-time inside the horizon, including the singularities, they are just really approximate concept which appearing only in the large n limit. It's some kind of illusion for the large n limit. It's because it happened due to approximation. And at finite n, really, they just such kind of concept don't even exist. Yeah. So let me just conclude by saying, so likely all these structures do not depend on the specific details of the super young Hamiltonian, and maybe only depend on the matrix structure. And so likely maybe enough to understand them from some simple quantum matrix quantum mechanics, maybe say some even like two matrix quantum mechanics may be able to do it. So we'll stop here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about the first part of your talk.
Mm-hmm. It depends. I think there's one example. You are talking about whether you see from the geometry some kind of universality of some infrared fixed points come from different.
Couplings out at a high cutoff surface do your procedure. And so presumably you should see that you most of those are not important. Does that automatically follow because you're in ADS or something?
It's not really automatic follow, but one remark I can make is that suppose when you integrate out degree freedom, say from say this is the z direction, say from some epsilon 0 to some epsilon. Mm-hmm. So depending on the question you are interested in. So on this SP, again, you can do a derivative expansion on SP. Even though this integration procedure will generate infinite terms for this SP, but typically what is important for the low-energy physics is not, say, the term of the leading term in SP in terms of derivative expansion. So this is essentially the reflection of this Wilsonian universality from the Bach point of view, is that all the details, many details of this UV series, not. It's not important, only a few parameters in this SP will be important for the low energy physics.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering if you started with a geometry that was dual to little string theory or some weird thing, or even flat space or something where we don't think there's a local field theory dual. I'm wondering what.
Yeah.
Something should be dramatically different. You know,
I think this is a good question. I don't know the answer, whether one can, from the features of the SP, to detect. Uh-huh. So